I think in many situations, we can make the case for saying it's not so good to have a menstrual cycle every single month. In some circumstances, we can make the case for suppressing it.
Girl, you've got questions. Questions about your body and how to feel good in it, about your hormones and how to keep them in check. Questions about your sex life and your whole health. Can you imagine having a best girlfriend who was also a triple board certified OBGYN? A girlfriend doctor you could call and ask or tell her anything. Someone who could show you how to live any stage of life before, during, or after menopause in a big, bold, and beautiful way. Well, friends, I'm your girlfriend doctor. I believe you are meant to flourish and shine, to embrace life and awaken to all its possibilities. Let's get there together. Welcome to our show.
Menopause is a normal life transition, just like puberty is. It is natural and mandatory, but suffering is optional. One of the most common areas that women suffer with in perimenopause and menopause is hot flashes. Hot flash hell, for sure, right? Hot flash hell. And vaginal dryness issues and confusion over what is safe and what's not safe. What about hormones and breast cancer? You know, what's causing what? Where do I get the best benefit for my life? Well, welcome to the Girlfriend Doctor Show. This is Dr. Anna Kabeca, and I'm going to address these issues with you today with a medical colleague, a fellow OBGYN, very famous, beautiful, amazing woman, Dr. Lauren Stryker, is joining me on the couch virtually, so to speak, from Chicago. She is amazing. And we're going to hit on these issues because it's so important. We can't talk about it enough. Men and women need to understand what's happening with our bodies so that we can, you know, grow together. We can on our own body as a woman on our own body and really understand what transitions that we can make as naturally as possible. What's going to help us? So Dr. Lauren Stryker, she is the clinical professor of obstetrics and gynecology at Northwestern University's Medical School, the Feinberg School of Medicine, and is the founder and medical director of the Northwestern Medicine Center for Sexual Medicine and Northwestern Center for Menopause in Chicago. And it's one of the rarest institutions in the country that do combine sexual medicine and menopausal medicine. I mean, other are top universities like Emory University in Atlanta, my alma mater. It has also a menopause clinic. Dr. Mary Dolan is out there at the menopause clinic. I mean, there are spots around the country. This is really ideal. And this is her focus and this is her passion. And you will see as we talk and her experience, she's interviewed all media. She's been in the New York Times. She's been on Chicago's top news shows. She's been on the Oprah Winfrey Show, CNN, NPR, Nightline, The Dr. Oz Show, Fox and Friends, Steve Harvey Show, Today Show, Good Morning America. I mean, name it, she has been on it. Plus, she's very prolific. She's written many books. And the Dr. Stryker's Inside Information series is a series of small books that are easily readable. So Slip Sliding Away is one, and Hot Flash Hell is another one that's coming out. She's also author of Sex RX, Hormones, Health, and Your Best Sex Ever. So it's important to understand what we're going to be, you know, talking about today, to share this information and to listen in. If you can, grab a pen and paper, make some notes. One of my favorite quotes from her interview that you'll hear is that she says, it doesn't matter how nice the room is if you can't get through the door. Wondering what we were talking about? Well, join me and let's go. Welcome, Dr. Lauren Stryker, to the Girlfriend Doctor Show. It is great to have you here with me today.
I am so excited to be joining you. We have so much to talk about, so I can't wait to get started.
Narrowing it down to just a couple topics is pretty challenging. So we're going to hit this. We're going to hit on our hot flashes. We're going to hit on dryness. We're going to hit on cannabis and menopause and when, how, benefits, risks, and all of those situations, some guidance there in all of these areas. Now, I have been so looking forward to talking with you. You are all over the media. You are so prolific, writing many books. And I've got a couple of your books here, this recent Slip Sliding Away. I just love the humor too, right? Frankness, and then Sex RX. So we're gonna talk about this because these are areas in our life that are uncomfortable to talk about. And what have you found in working with women and talking about sexual health? Like, what are the most common things that women come into you for?
Well, you know, I run a menopause clinic here in Chicago. I run the Northwestern Medicine Center for Sexual Medicine and for menopause. And I always say, you know, while we have women fill out a questionnaire so they have an opportunity to list everything that has changed in their lives and everything that is bothering them, at the end of the questionnaire, we ask that all-important question. If you could only fix one thing, what would it be? And it's always basically the same four things. It's hot flashes. It's I want to get some sleep. I want sex to not hurt and help me maintain a normal, healthy weight. Those are the big four. And that makes sense because as you and I know, when we talk to our menopause patients, those are the symptoms that are most common, even though there's a list of what, you know, another 100 symptoms that women have.
Yeah, the most troublesome, right? That are affecting our quality of life and function on a daily basis. Now I'd throw in there the bladder leaking and incontinence issues that are, you know, like just don't want to deal with that, nor do we want to talk about it. So that's for sure.
As you said, it's not just quality of life. What we're really appreciating is that it's also length of life. You know, when we talk about the impact of hot flashes, yes, women are miserable and they can't sleep and they're sweating through their clothes and they can't get through a meeting and it's impacting on every aspect of their life. But we also now know that hot flashes can contribute to serious medical conditions that can shorten lifespan.
Yes, absolutely true. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about hot flashes as a symptom of underlying disease process, right? That goes beyond menopause. There is so much. Finally, there's some good research that's showing up and that are looking at what, 2.2 times the risk of coronary vascular disease if we have hot flashes.
That's right. And you're exactly correct. And not only looking at heart disease, but when we look at bone health, at osteoporosis, which is another huge issue, of course. And then when we look at even breast cancer, because what we know is when someone has a hot flash, what's going on in their body, in addition to their internal furnace being out of control, is that there's actually an increase in cortisol. There's an increase in the inflammatory response. And as a result of that, you have these inflammatory changes that can occur in every cell of the body, in our bones, in our blood vessels, in our heart. And now what we're understanding is that that's one, not the only reason, but one of the reasons that women have an acceleration of a risk of heart disease as they age and as they go through menopause. And what's so interesting is when we look at the data at all the studies, and we know that after menopause is when heart disease takes off in women. But if you divide postmenopause women into two groups, the flashers and the non-flashers, even when you accommodate for other risk factors like being overweight or family history or smoking or all the other, you know, bad things we know that can cause heart disease, it's the flashers that have the biggest impact on their cardiovascular health.
And I think this is what was so important when I was doing working with patients, going through menopause once, twice, whatever, three times, the issue that comes up with hot flashes, unremitting hot flashes, constant persistent hot flashes being associated with insulin resistance.
Yes.
And when we get a hole, when we become more insulin sensitive, the hot flashes completely go away. And we've seen that in our Keto Green community. Women are like, in 2 weeks, my hot flashes I've had for 10 years are gone. Well, and that piece is that insulin sensitivity.
The insulin resistance is so important because even if you go back to WHI, the Women's Health Initiative study, which we all know is very problematic in terms of the design for all the reasons that I'm sure you've talked about a million times, the women were too old, they were taking an estrogen and progestin combination that we don't recommend anymore, that it was oral. I mean, we can go on and on and on. But even in that study, with those women taking estrogen, there was a decrease in insulin resistance, and it was protective against the development of diabetes and metabolic syndrome. And that was in all ages, not just in the young women. So yes, it's not just about, you know, feeling more comfortable. It is about minimizing these serious medical problems.
So let's talk about therapy. So one is estrogen. Now let's talk about, you know, I want to address this and then how you and in your clinic too address it in clients with breast cancer, with current being treated for breast cancer, a history of breast cancer.
You know, one of our biggest challenges, of course, as menopause experts is assuring women that not only is estrogen not dangerous, but that it's actually good for them. And we have a lot of work to do to re-educate not only patients, but quite frankly, other doctors who are not the experts we are, who don't really understand the data. And very often we'll spend a lot of time talking to our patients about the safety of hormone therapy. And then they go off to see an internist or someone else who's like, oh my God, go off that, you know, or only take it for a little bit or a small amount. And they, you know, scare them. And I think the number one message that we have for women is that the overwhelming majority of women, that it is absolutely not only the most effective form of treatment we have, but it is safe, safe, safe. And certainly we talk about what, you know, transdermal going through the skin preparations are in general safer than oral preparations. We talk about that women with the uterus that need to protect the lining of the uterus from taking estrogen. You know, they have different options in terms of which of the progestins they can use that are going to protect their uterus. But our number one message is this is safe and this is effective. Having said that, we can talk and talk and talk and talk and talk, and a lot of our patients still say no, thank you. Although it's always interesting to me that these same patients who happily took birth control pills, which is a higher dose and more potent hormone therapy for years, when it's time to transition over to postmenopause hormone therapy, they're like, no, thank you. And in fact, this is even safer than birth control pills. But having said that, we know that there are not a lot of non-hormone options. But to get to your second point, the breast cancer patient. One of the things that I'm, you know, out there talking about all the time that people just like scratch their head and say, are you kidding? Is when I say that not only does not estrogen increase your risk of breast cancer, but it most likely decreases your risk of breast cancer. And we have good data to support that. And again, even going back to that 20-year-old study, the WHI, if you looked at the estrogen-only group, there was a huge decrease in breast cancer. And that's the memo that we're trying to get out there. It wasn't estrogen, it was the progestin. And it was a specific progestin they used, Provera, medroxyprogesterone acetate. And we have other progesterones that we can use and other things that we can use to protect the lining of the uterus. So yes, you know, we know that estrogen is fine for someone who is at risk of breast cancer. But the other question is, how about someone who has breast cancer, which is a little different. Because if they have estrogen receptor positive breast cancer, you know, we don't know. We really don't have the studies because everyone's afraid to do them. But that if you give estrogen to those women, is it going to stimulate recurrence? We don't know. So the greater good in the absence of data is to say we're going to use some non-estrogen options in order to treat your hot flashes.
And I think this is where it's important to really understand. I love what you said. Okay, so we're looking at estrogen risk and breast cancer, and we can feel really safe with estrogen alone. I mean, Women's Health Initiative study did prove that, right? It did prove, and that's even with the worst form of estrogen, oral estrogen, which I really transitioned by age 50, if they have risk factors, certainly by age 55, to a transdermal estrogen whenever possible. We have such good ways to deliver it vaginally, transdermally, because oral estrogens can increase the inflammatory markers that lead up to coagulopathy and cardiovascular disease. So we want to switch. And so that's really important. It is hard to do for those who are on oral estrogen in your 50s and you're thinking, oh, I don't want to get off it. It's hard to switch, but it's just better in the long run. And so that's a really big piece that I feel very compelled with. And then our breast cancer patients, what options were given them and being able to look. I mean, 20 years ago, there was a study that was published that looked at vaginal estrogen in women with breast cancer, a history of breast cancer. And it showed decreased morbidity, decreased mortality with vaginal estrogen. That's essential, but we'll go, you know, we're talking about that too for dryness. We'll hit on that. But and even with hot flashes, there's certainly like there's so much that we can do. The insulin resistant piece is key. And what will help our clients with breast cancer is that, you know, increasing insulin sensitivity and intermittent fasting through that will definitely help them. But I do feel safe in our clients looking at some of the androgen data with testosterone and DHEA, certainly vaginally administered, that there's that very low risk and improvement in quality of life that we can offer our patients even, even during that time. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I think also we do forget, you know, to your point, that while you and I are so comfortable with estrogen therapy for our patients, we have to face the reality of we're up against a big wall. And so we do need to be able to offer other options to our patients, because this is shared decision making. It's not just about what we think, it's about what women think and what they're comfortable with. And so I don't try and talk anybody into anything, because we know that when you do, they will walk out the door and not fill the prescription. So, you know, I always try and say, just you tell me. In fact, that's one of the questions we ask patients when they come into the clinic on our questionnaire, is what are your feelings about hormone therapy? And it's multiple choice. And they can either say, yes, I'm excited, I'm all for it, no way, I would never consider it, or I'm open to hearing about it. And we really pay attention to that, because the people that walk in the door who say, I'm not interested, we try and give them our 30-second spiel on it, just to say, listen, you know, I know you're against it, but we just want to let you know that if you're open to this conversation, we think that this is a safe and effective option for you. And if they're like, we just don't even go there, you know, we just start to kind of go through all the other options, which are mostly off-label, meaning that they're perfectly legal, and we know that they're safe and effective, but they are not FDA approved for that purpose. But nonetheless, we still have a lot of options to offer our patients, and a lot of things in development that are coming up that we think we'll be able to turn to.
What are some of your favorites? What's coming up that you can't wait, or what are some of your off-label favorites?
Well, as far as what's coming up is the what we call the CANDY receptor stimulators, and that's a company that it's basically the CANDY receptor, just to be really simple about it, is the part of our brain that controls temperature. There's an actual neuron, which is called the CANDY neuron, which is the thermostat regulator. And we know that estrogen is necessary to keep it in control. And that's one of the reasons why when women go through menopause and they no longer are making estrogen, their CANDY neuron is just like an overdrive. And there's a new drug, which of course is nameless at this point because it hasn't been FDA approved yet. But basically it's a drug which will calm down that receptor, that neuron. And what they're finding in the clinical trials, and it is in phase 3 clinical trials, which is the last part of it before it gets out there, what they're finding in the phase 3 clinical trials is that it's like 95% of women are hot flash free. This is non-hormonal. So this is going to be big news. I just talked to the company, because my book that's coming out, Hot Flash Hell, I wanted to include a chapter about this new development. And I said, so how close are we? When are we going to see this? When can women go to the pharmacy and they get it? And they said, well, you know, these things move very slowly. They said, we're looking at 2023. So I said, okay. So it went from, you know, a chapter to a paragraph saying.
So frustrating sometimes.
So frustrating. Do you know it's an average of 20 years from the time a drug is developed till it gets, you know, to our pharmacy shelves? And those are the ones that make it. You know, forget the ones that don't make it. As far as the off-label stuff, you know, certainly we go to the SSRIs, as we have been for years, because we, you know, discovered years ago serendipitously that these drugs that are being used for depression actually alleviate hot flashes. More than the number of hot flashes, it's more the severity. It takes those severe hot flashes down to a moderate or a mild. Brizdal, of course, is a very low dose, 7.5 milligrams of paroxetine, which in higher doses is Paxil, used for depression. That's the only one that's FDA approved. We use a lot of other ones off label that are a little higher dose, but you know, there's no free lunch, right? The problem with these antidepressants is a lot of women end up losing their libido, having problems with orgasm, gaining weight.
Right.
You know, we don't see that in the 7.5 milligram paroxetine in Brizdal. So that's, you know, sometimes our first go-to, because we're not going to get those side effects. But it's not going to be for everyone. So we you know, have to kind of play around with it. And there are a lot of other drugs that we try, and they all have side effects, of course. We have to try and kind of look at the individual. And this is very individual, you know.
Yeah.
And we really spend a lot of time at our center talking to women and really taking into account, what are their other medical problems? What are their issues? What might be right for them? And one of the things that we are starting to talk about more is cannabis, mm-hmm. because we know that women are out there doing it, and that they're doing it for alleviation of hot flashes. And while we don't have a lot of good studies, we do have a lot of good science behind it that can inform our ability to guide our patients and what would be the best for them.
And I think this is such an interesting discussion. I mean, I really want to go into this cannabis and also how it affects the anandamide receptors. I mean, it's just beautiful stuff here, right? It's so good. But I want to just wrap up our hot flashes. We'll, for a second, just kind of summarize, because we covered so much, Lauren, and it's just so important. I want our audience to understand that if you're still struggling with hot flashes, right? And we're talking hormones. We want your comfort level. You know that we're very comfortable. We treat patients. We see what, you know, what creates breast cancer and what doesn't create breast cancer. And I want to encourage you that there's so much more, right? It takes, you know, from my book, The Hormone Fix, it takes more than hormones to fix your hormones, right? So in this, these lifestyle changes that I encourage everyone to make, right? The intermittent fasting, the keto green living, the no more snacking. I mean, let's just cut that out and really empower our body's major hormones beyond the reproductive hormones, insulin, cortisol, and the most important hormone, oxytocin. And so before we move into cannabis, Lauren, I want to know, like, have you worked with oxytocin in your practice and what your experience is there?
Yeah, no, that's not something I have an experience with. We have not worked with that. But what we do emphasize, to your point, is it matters what you put in your mouth. Healthy eating is critically important, a healthy weight, a healthy lifestyle. You know, so often women come in and will say, I'm not going to use estrogen. And quite frankly, they're smoking and weighing 200 pounds. And like, really? You know, you think, you know, when we look at these other factors, because while we focus a lot about
or the glass of wine every night, right?
Well, the glass of wine at night's not so bad, but it should be a glass of wine, not a bottle of wine. You know, and I think with, like with anything else, it's an awareness, it's moderation. And it's really being mindful of how we treat our bodies. And this starts long before menopause. You know, I was doing actually a Facebook Live with our osteoporosis expert last night, and this is a whole other topic about menopause. We won't get into that today, other than we were talking about the fact that it's the pediatricians that should be talking about this stuff. You know, saying, okay, now is the time when you're 12, 13 years old that's going to set the framework. So what you're gonna, how you're gonna be when you're 60 or 70, and that's a hard one to kind of address, because our pediatricians have a lot of other things to talk about. But I think really that's the point. That's what we're both talking about, is saying, you know, we're given this one body, and we need to take care of it, and we need to treat it right, and that's gonna matter because we are living longer. We're living almost half of our life after the menopause transition, so that we have to do these things.
So true. I mean, you say that so well, and it's that time of puberty, right? Within puberty is setting the stage for how well are we going to do with menopause. And so simply suppressing our menstrual cycles during that time is a really bad idea.
No, I think it's a good idea. Are you kidding? I love to suppress. I think, you know, it's interesting that you should bring that up, because when we talk about menstrual suppression, either with birth control pills or IUDs, I think we have good data to show that there are benefits to that in terms of uterine cancer, ovarian cancer. And what I always talk about is when you look at back in the cave people day, you know, and when you look at life expectancy and how many kids were put on earth, they have babies, right? And the typical cave woman had like 24 periods in her lifetime before she died. And the typical woman now has hundreds of menstrual cycles, because we have an average of two babies. We start early, we start at 9 or 10, we stop when we're 51. And I think in many situations, we can make the case for saying it's not so good to have a menstrual cycle every single month. And that in some cases, in some circumstances, we can make the case for suppressing it.
Yeah, in some circumstances, but definitely later in life. We know like 7 years of birth control pills decrease risk of ovarian cancer, but the earlier before age 16 starting birth control pills increase risk of breast cancer. So we have to, I think there's that, you know, we really need to look at the reason for the birth control pills to begin with, especially we have to have a better way, because the oral estrogens, the progestins, I mean, these are toxins to our system. So choose our toxins, right? We got to choose our toxins.
And then I choose wine.
Yeah, I choose wine. I'm with you on that. So beautiful discussion. There's a lot that can be done for hot flashes. Don't give up, and that we have options. Now let's move into the discussion of cannabis.
Let me start by saying that this is all new to me. Cannabis is not something that was discussed in medical school. It's not something we learned in our residency. It's not something that comes up at medical conferences. One of the interesting things I learned when I'm doing my research for Hot Flash Hell and my chapter on cannabis is we may not have been learning about it, but it's been around in the medical literature for a long time. And the Merck Manual, which of course is a very, very old medical textbook dating back to the mid 1800s, I was able to get a copy of the Merck Manual from 1870. And in the one page on menopause, they didn't call it menopause then, they called it the climacteric, but on the one page, they say in the list of treatments, cannabis. Cannabis is there. It's absolutely there. And I always laugh, it's kind of funny that it's right next to a change of atmosphere and fresh air. So I said, well, this is great. What a great recommendation for a suffering menopausal woman. She should take a vacation and smoke some pot and she'll feel so much better. And that was back in the 1800s. But I think too, the other thing is that aside from the fact that it's been around for a long time and we do have a science behind it, is the other thing that I now appreciate is that women are doing it anyway. And there was a study that came out, it was about a year ago. It's the only study that I've been able to find that basically questioned menopause women to say, how often are you using cannabis to relieve menopause symptoms? And in this one study, they said 27% of women at some point had tried cannabis in order to relieve hot flashes, vaginal dryness, sleep, libido, you know, all the other hot topics. And I thought, wow, I bet it's higher than that, because in our clinic, we talk to women all the time and we ask them directly, have you tried cannabis? And it seems like everyone says yes. So I have a survey, which I've just put out there, and the results are just starting to come in, but I thought I want to do my own research to find out what's going on in the country now, because I wanted a much bigger pool, a much bigger population. And so I've only had a few hundred responses. I'm hoping for more. And for any of your viewers who want to take the survey, it's on my Facebook page, facebook.com/Dr. Stryker. And what I've learned so far with only about 200 surveys that have come in is that, first of all, 90% of women who have taken my survey tried cannabis, granted a skewed population. These are women who are answering the survey because they're interested in this, but still pretty striking. But the other thing that's so striking to me is they are not getting any advice as to how to take it, what to take it. And they're out there on their own. So one of the questions I asked in the survey is, who advised you? Who advised you what to take? And it's multiple choice. So it's my doctor, healthcare professional. Like, no one says that. At the dispensary, probably 20, 25% of people. But the overwhelming majority of respondents say, I had to figure it out on my own. And then when I ask what they're taking for these specific symptoms, they're not taking the right thing to address their symptoms. So I think also as doctors, and it's kind of uncomfortable for us because we don't have the good studies, we don't have the good data, but I do think that the onus is on us to advise our patients and to say, if you're going to go the cannabis route, this is what will help you. This is what you should know in terms of how you take it, meaning smoke it, eat it, put it under your tongue, put it on your vagina, put it on your vulva, you know, put it on your clitoris. How do you take it? How often do you use it? And then what product, what kind of product? You know, I think we really need to help our patients with that.
Well, and how is it working? How is it working with menopausal symptoms? I mean, definitely, like, we know there's the CBD versus the THC components and how it's working neurologically within our system. Yeah. to support, you know, support that ease, that relaxation, that hormonal balance.
Well, going back, and you'd already brought it up, if you go back to the endocannabinoids, and there's a very specific, endocannabinoids, of course, our internal system, our natural system that keeps our body in balance and in check for all kinds of systems, you know, including just, you know, how we feel, our appetite, our sense of well-being, but also our internal thermostat. And one of the things that I learned is that one of the endocannabinoids, very specific, specifically controls our thermostat, and that estrogen is required in the metabolic pathway of that internal cannabinoid. So in many ways, it first of all makes sense that when we're out of estrogen, when our estrogen tank is on empty, that that's one of the things that's going to throw off our internal thermostat. But it's the other reason why cannabis actually can get us back on track. Specifically, let's talk hot flashes right now, specifically with hot flashes. But again, you know, it has to be the right one. So what's the right one? It's got to be THC. It's, if you take CBD, which has all kinds of benefits, we know we can go through all the benefits of CBD. But when it comes to hot flash relief, you really need THC. And specifically, you need to also have some indica in there. So we're looking at the hybrids, meaning a combination of CBD, THC, make sure it's indica. You know, those are the kinds of things that would help women who are trying to address their hot flashes and they just don't know what to take.
So and indica is a, you know, a type
it's one of the types,
marijuana.
Correct. So, you know, when we talk about types, there's sativa that I always say, you know, remember sativa sex. Sativa is the one that helps with perhaps libido, but it's not going to help your hot flashes. Indica is the one that appears to help hot flashes. So someone says to me, well, what if I want to help my hot flashes and my sex life? Well, that's where the hybrids come in. Or, you know, when you might choose to use one versus another. So many women, their issue is sleep, or maybe it's joint pain. So it really gets very tricky. And again, women are relying on either what they can figure out on their own or what they're advised by someone at the dispensary. And let's be real clear, the man or the woman working behind the counter at the dispensary is not a medical professional. And they're basically giving their recommendations anecdotally, you know, what they've been told or what someone else has told them. And sometimes they're right, but sometimes they're wrong. And so my one mantra when I tell women that they're gonna go the cannabis route is be very, very careful. Start slow and go low. Mm-hmm. Whatever that person tells you in the dispensary, cut it in half. You know, if you need more than that, you'll get there eventually, but you don't wanna overdo it. And the reason why this is so important is that the science now shows us that postmenopause women metabolize cannabis different than premenopause women. Men, women already metabolize it more slowly than men, we know that. But postmenopause, because estrogen, you need estrogen to help metabolize the cannabinoids. So when you give any cannabis to a postmenopause woman, it is gonna take forever for her to metabolize it. And the, you know, the 21-year-old behind the counter in the dispensary is not going to appreciate that. So if you eat the gummy and then 2 hours later, you're thinking, okay, first of all, it was really good. It tasted good. And number two, I'm really not feeling the effect. You're going to pop another gummy. And guess what? You're going to have too much because it might take you 2 hours to metabolize it. And then suddenly you've gotten way more than you need. So you have to really be mindful of the fact that you have to just take it slowly, just a little bit at a time.
That's good. That's good information. Which is the benefit? Which one benefits sleep the most?
It's going to be indica. It's going to be CBD. And again, we don't have good data, but on my survey, for whatever it's worth so far, when I asked symptom by symptom, what did using cannabis help your symptoms? And when it comes to things like hot flashes and libido and painful sex and all that, which we know is so multifactorial, it's kind of all over the place. Sleep was literally so far, 98% of women in my survey say, yep, I'm sleeping just great. And sleep is so critical. You know, so often when women come into the clinic and they say, I'm moody and I'm tired and I'm miserable and I'm this and I'm that. And the first question is, well, are you sleeping? No. You know, how many hours are you getting a night? Maybe 4 or 5. Well, okay. We have to figure out why you're not sleeping. It might be hot flashes. We have to fix the hot flashes. It might be restless leg. It might be sleep apnea. There's a lot of, there might be that you're like completely stressed out about the state of the world. Whatever it is, we need to address it because if you don't sleep, nothing else is going to work for you.
Well said. Well said. I couldn't agree with you more. Definitely. It is one of the hardest things to do in menopause and postmenopause, getting those good night's sleep.
Absolutely. And I cannot tell you how important it is. Even when we talk about weight loss, you know, we talk about how hard it is for postmenopause women to lose the weight and maintain a healthy weight. And, you know, We get that. But the component that people forget is the sleep component, because what they'll say is, I don't get it. I am eating right. I am exercising. I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do, and I cannot lose the weight. And again, my question always is, are you sleeping? And when they say no, you know, maybe 4 or 5 hours, that's what's sabotaging their weight loss plan, because we know that the hunger hormones, leptins and ghrelins, are controlled by sleep. And if you don't get that 7 hours in, it doesn't matter how good you are about avoiding carbs and doing 3 hours of cardiovascular exercise every day, you're not going to lose the weight. So when we talk about how hot flashes impact on weight, part of it is a direct relationship, but a lot of it is just the sleep issue. But that's, again, to circle back to the cannabis thing, that's why it is so beneficial for women to use cannabis to get a good night's sleep, but they need to do it the right way. You know, I'm trying to encourage women not to vape or smoke, because that's not good for your lungs.
No.
And I'm also steering people away from the edibles, because while they are delicious, and I always say they should put it on broccoli, people wouldn't eat too much then. But because they're all like candy and brownies and cookies and gummies and all that good stuff. But really the safest way, quite frankly, for a woman to use cannabis is using one of the tinctures that goes under the tongue. Because the beauty of that is that you're not messing with your lungs, and it's not going through the gastrointestinal system, which is quite frankly where you get into this slow, slow, slow metabolism. So if someone uses a tincture under the tongue, they're going to get their peak effect in like 10 minutes. So you can really gauge if it's helping you. But you know, people are kind of not thinking about that. They're not steered that way. The under tongue thing is very important.
Yeah, and I think the tinctures, like in my experience too, it's just a better way to go, especially bypass hepatic metabolism, bypass the gastrointestinal tract, and, you know, sublingual, I believe the same for hormones too, you know, sublingual, subbuccal, you know, in between the, under the tongue or in between the cheek and gum. Okay, are there certain ones that you found to be able to recommend with more confidence than others?
Not yet. You know, I'm very careful with my recommendations. And as I mentioned earlier, this is a very new world to me. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to really learn the science behind it. I don't recommend specific products. I'm just saying, you know, go THC, go with indica. But I do have to caution people that there's a lot of different growers out there. There's a lot of different places where you can source cannabis, and it matters. It matters. It matters what you're getting. You want to find a source that you can really trust what's in it, that it's going to be consistent, that you're going to get the same thing every time you use it. There is a cannabis farm that I have a relationship with, full disclosure. I was just there in Oregon. I talk about it in my book a little bit. This is Jim Belushi's farm, Blues Brothers Bud. And I was out there because we happened to be personal friends, and we were out there. He was filming some stuff for the Discovery Channel for his TV show, Growing Belushi. But it was great for me because I had an opportunity to see how it's done right, how it's pure, to meet with the growers, to really talk about the medicinal aspects. And just my luck, the week that I was there is when there were all the chocolatiers were out there talking about infusing their chocolate with cannabis. So it was very delicious, but we had to be very careful with what we were ingesting. But so I'm learning, but it's important for us to learn, to acknowledge that this is helpful, our patients are doing it, so let's do it right.
Let's do it. Let's be able to guide them in it, you know, the best of our ability. It's a new world for me too, Lauren. So I thank you for talking about it. A lot to do, a lot to learn, constantly evolving. And then again, the safest, healthiest way, go slow. Really be in tune with your body, what's working for you, what's not working for you. Do your health inventory. I mean, for our listeners, our audience, I mean, check in with yourself and see what's working for you, what's not working for you. And I will say, if you don't test, you're guessing. And that includes your at-home questionnaires. I have those for you in the Hormone Fix. Those are there. It's available. You want to check that out and definitely get good resources. So Dr. Stryker's books, I mean, so prolific, so many of them. So Amazon and everywhere else. And excited to share that with you. This episode of the show is sponsored by Jolva. Jolva is an all-natural, anti-aging cosmetic cream for your delicate feminine parts, created by triple board certified OBGYN, Dr. Anna Kabeca. If you want to stop embarrassing urine leaks, reduce vaginal discomfort and dryness, and reignite your intimate relationship, try Jolva today at dranna.com and use the code SHOW10 to get 10% off your first order. I want to switch now and talk about vaginal dryness, especially with your book coming out, Slip Sliding Away, and then women coming in, you know, again, one complaint that creates disconnect in a relationship, creates loss of libido, is if we have pain every time we have sex. And I always tell clients, if you have pain every time you do something, why would you want to do it? Of course, you're not going to want to have sex.
Yeah, vagina's not stupid.
And it's not stupid.
And they say, I have no libido. And then my next question is, well, when was the last time you had intercourse or tried to have intercourse? And they'll say, oh, like 6 months ago. And I'll say, and how did it go? It hurt like hell. Okay, well then it's no mystery why you have no libido, because your vagina is not stupid and your vagina is saying, don't go in there, this is gonna hurt. So that's actually our approach to libido, is we first fix the pain. And then we circle back and say, how's your libido now? And if they're still having issues, of course, then we deal with that because it's so multifactorial. But you have to fix the pain. But when I talk about vaginal dryness and my book Slip Sliding Away, I think we really need to also address the bigger picture, because yes, of course it's about pain with intercourse and it's about sexual relations, but it's also just about vaginal and vulvar health and the impact that that has on so many other things. I mean, you know, the way I know, women do not associate the fact that they have recurrent bladder infections, urgency, and that constant gotta go feeling with the fact that their vagina and their vulva are starved for estrogen, because this impacts those tissues as well. So while I do, of course, address the sexual issues and sleep sliding away, I give equal time to talking about the non-sexual issues, because a lot of women think that the only reason to use a product on the vagina or the vulva is if they want to have sex. And oh my God, no, it's just to be comfortable. It's to get rid of the urinary symptoms. It's just to have vulvar and vaginal health.
I love this conversation because it's so important, so critical, and it affects us. It will affect every one of us. I would say, like, we get wrinkles on our face, right? We're getting wrinkles down there. That's affecting the most important real estate of our body, which is clitoris to anus. Let's not forget any part of it. I mean, clitoral atrophy, we think of that, you know, anal fissures, hemorrhoids, that just create such discomfort in quality of life, just for men and women, right? So it does, it goes beyond. And not just vaginal pain with intercourse that keeps women from having sex, but it's the odor after, the discharge, the discomfort for days, the urinary tract infection after, that often come into play. But that right in that same area, it's not just about dryness, it's incontinence, it's prolapse, it's pelvic discomfort, hemorrhoids. I mean, all of this area. That's why it's most important real estate.
Well, the other thing, we talk about real estate, and I know you and I are on the same page about this, is it drives me nuts when people keep talking vagina, 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 when it should be vulva, vulva, vulva. You know, 90% of the time when a woman comes in and she says, I have a rash or I have an itch or this in my vagina, she's talking about her vulva. And I keep talking about the poor forgotten vulva, because so many times when we talk about failures, the woman who comes to our clinic, and you know, I'm the medical director of a sexual medicine clinic, so we see women who say, there's something wrong with me because I went to my doctor and they gave me a prescription for a vaginal estrogen insert and I used it faithfully and it still hurt. And then I do an examination and I say, well, the reason that it hurt is because you have treated the vagina very nicely, but you have not treated the entry to the vagina or the vulva. And it doesn't matter how nice the room is if you can't get through the door. So we need to treat the vulva as well. And you're not broken, it's that your vulva desperately needs help. And I know you experience the same thing with your patients, because we see the failures. You know, people come to us saying, no one else has been able to help me. And it's because the right thing is not being addressed.
I agree 100%. It's why I created Jolva as a topical cream to be used, you know, on the clitoris, on the vulva, at the opening. I mean, just to be used topically and like just massage it in, use it as a lubricant, use it, you know, as your part of your daily cosmetic routine. I mean, it's just critical, this area, because every one of us, I mean, like we treat generations of women. Yeah. Every one of us will get atrophy, you know, thinning of the skin, pain and discomfort as we age, unless we intervene. And the sooner we intervene, the better.
You know, the other thing also is, and again, you know, the two of us, it's like we could be having the same things coming out of our mouth. But when we talk about paying attention to the vulva and the clitoris and the labia, if you put a sign with the parts and said to a woman, label the parts, we know that the majority of women are not able to label their own parts of their genitalia, because as I always say, you know, guys have the advantage if they look down and it's right there. They don't have to figure out where everything is. For women, it's much more of a mystery. And in our clinic, we see so many women who have never had an orgasm, and it's not because they have anything wrong with them. It's because they don't know where their clitoris is, and because they need to be told that there has to be clitoral stimulation. But to your point, when we talk about vulvar vaginal dryness and addressing the entire vulva, including the clitoris, because a lot of times women can't have an orgasm, and it's simply because the tissue is so dry and the blood supply has diminished because of the lack of estrogen. And it is sometimes as simple as putting a little estrogen on the clitoris to increase the blood flow, to increase the health of those all important teeny tiny little nerve endings that will enable them to have more sensitivity. But it really starts with saying, we have to educate women. You know, we use a mirror in our clinic. Every woman that comes in, we get the mirror out, and half of them go, oh, I don't want to look. No, we don't force people to look, but we really encourage them, because they don't look at their vulvas. Women have this idea that they're not attractive, that they don't look a certain way, that their labia are too long, that their pubic hair is too full, that, you know, whatever. And they don't look. And this is such an important part of vulvar health and vaginal health, is actually looking and being aware of what's normal and what's healthy and what's not, so that we can address it.
And knowing your own anatomy, like we talk about doing your self breast exam, knowing your own anatomy, what does it feel like? What does it look like? How is it changing? You know, and that's a really important aspect. So walk us through an examination.
So, well, I always tell people when they come to the center that they're going to have an exam unlike any exam they've ever had, because every woman that goes to the gynecologist for her annual pap and exam, I mean, first of all, you're in and out the door in about 14 seconds. And in general, and there are exceptions, there are good gynecologists like you and me who pay attention. So I don't want to make it sound like they're, you know, we're the only ones. There are good gynecologists out there. But we know that many, many gynecologists, basically, they talk with you for a few minutes. Once you get up in the stirrups, they put that speculum in, they do the pap, and they're, you know, they do the bimanual to check the uterus and the ovaries, and then they're done. We do about 20 other steps. So the first thing we do is first of all, part of our exam is actually talking to someone in their clothes for a long time before we have them get undressed. But when we do the exam, and I'm going to stick specific, I'm not going to get into breasts and abdomen and all thyroid and all those other important things we do, but just as far as the vulvar and vaginal exam. So the first thing we do is we get that mirror out, and then we take a Q-tip, and as the woman is watching, we go through and we literally touch every part. We start on the outside with the labia majora. We then move into the labia minora, to the vestibule, which is the opening to the vagina. We then go up and we point out the clitoris. We point out the hood of the clitoris. It should retract, meaning it should slide over the clitoris, because that's what happens with healthy tissue. And we also just look at the skin. There are a lot of skin conditions of the vulva that get missed. Things like, you know, lichen sclerosis, with even precancers, cancers, psoriasis. So we pay a lot of attention to the skin itself. And we haven't even gotten our speculums out of the drawer yet. You know, we are just looking, and talking, explaining anatomy, explaining what these things are. If someone is having pain, we then do what's called a Q-tip test, which is very simple. We take a Q-tip and we touch the various areas of the vulva to see, where is your pain? How much pressure does it take to cause the pain? If we have someone who's having problems with orgasm, when we look at the clitoris, in addition to looking at the size, as we look at the color, is it pink? Does it look healthy? We do a little neurologic exam of the clitoris, because a lot of women who can't have an orgasm, they think that there's something neurologically wrong. We make sure, can you feel pressure? Can you feel temperature? Can you feel sensation? Those are all critically important in terms of determining why someone isn't able to have an orgasm. And then, only then, do we start to look inside. But the one last thing we do before we look inside is we measure vaginal pH, because vaginal pH, more than anything else, is going to inform us about, is there a healthy microbiome, the healthy bacteria that are in there? What is their estrogen level inside the vagina? And this is like 2 seconds. So we take a little piece of paper, pH paper, we put it inside, and it tells us if it's in that healthy 3.5 to 4.5 level, or if it's high. If it's high, might be menopause and low estrogen, it might be an infection, but those are all things that need to be taken under consideration. And then we put the speculum in. as small as possible. By the way, one of my most popular articles on drstryker.com is, you know, one speculum, one size does not fit all, because women are just, you know, but that's a whole nother topic. But anyway, so once we put the speculum in addition, if someone needs a pap test, of course we do it, but we are really looking at the vaginal walls to make sure that they're the right color, that they have those nice little wrinkles that you need in order to expand, in order to have normal elasticity. Do we see some normal lubrication? All of that. So we pay a lot of attention to that. And then after we remove the speculum, of course, yes, we check like every gynecologist does, your uterus, your ovaries, to make sure that they're in the right place and the right size and they don't hurt. But then we do the most important part of the exam for a woman who's having pain, and that's a pelvic floor evaluation, because all of those muscles that are supporting the vagina, the bladder, the rectum, everyone always thinks about having strong muscles, and it is important to have strong muscles in terms of thinking of like incontinence and, you know, all of that. But just as important as having strong muscles is having muscles that are able to relax. Mm-hmm. Because so often we talked about, you know, with pain, what happens is people go into like, oh my God, this is going to hurt mode. And what we need to appreciate is that the pelvic floor muscles, when we say the don't go in there defense mechanism, it's the muscles talking. Right. So we do an evaluation of the muscles to see if someone would benefit from pelvic floor physical therapy. And I forgot one thing in my vulvar exam that we do before we put the speculum in, and we look at the urethra. We take a very careful look at the urethra, which is, of course, the tube where the urine is coming out, because a lot of women that are having urgency or recurrent urinary tract infections, we can actually see changes in the urethra, something called funneling, that it's kind of popping out. I always tell the medical students when I'm teaching them that this is going to be one of their number one indications of a woman who has vaginal and vulvar tissue that really needs estrogen, is if the urethra is like popping out. And so these are easy things, and they're, you know, they give us so much information, but quite frankly, these are not things that happen at a routine gynecologic exam.
Right, right. Or just happens in a blink of an eye, and it's not a thorough evaluation. And I know you're looking too at the anal skin too, when you talked about the skin down by the anus. And guys, you know, homework tonight for all our listeners, get that mirror out. Take a look. What is your, from clitoris, what does your clitoris look like? The vulvar area, the vaginal opening, the skin around, all the way the band between your vagina and your anus and the anus itself. And how's it look? Are there hemorrhoids? Are there, you know, what's happening there? What does it look like? Is the skin thinning out? I mean, I think that is so critically, of course, we're on the same page with that, so critically important.
The other thing also to your point is, you know, when someone looks for the first time, sometimes they get really alarmed because they're seeing something that they've never seen before. And then it's always the question of, well, is this normal or is this cause for concern? And it's because women don't look throughout their life. And I can't tell you how many times someone will come in and say, oh my God, I finally took a look and I saw, you know, fill in the blank. And we'll say, actually, this is completely normal. But everyone has this idea of what their genitals should look like, what their vulva should look like, how long their labia should be. And they take a look and they think, oh my God, there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with me. And more often than not, they're perfectly normal.
Perfectly normal. And that's a good question too at your gynecology visit. How's everything look? Is it normal? I mean, those, we've had babies, things change, you know, our anatomy shifts. I mean, this is as we age, but really getting a hold of it. And I do want to emphasize what you said about pelvic pain, hypertonic, you know, spastic muscles causing pain and being able to feel that, you know, as a gynecologist too, you know, assessing the psoas muscles internally, assessing the pelvic floor muscles internally, what is happening there? What could be causing pain? And for our listeners, I did a podcast a couple of weeks ago with Allison Chikandre out of Pelvic Rehabilitation Medicine Center here in Dallas. Guys, watch that. Watch that on YouTube. Great anatomy lesson, great information. And certainly if you're struggling from pelvic pain, you want to revisit that episode. That's for sure. And I'm also going to emphasize that pH. Though my audience have my keto pH test strip. If you have that at home, just check your, you know, put a strip in your vagina. It should not change color. It should not change color because the vaginal mucosa, the vaginal environment, milieu is very acidic. Ideally, and if it does, if it starts to go more, you know, deeper yellow or green, you're in that green.
Navy blue. We hate navy blue.
Definitely. That's definitely a sign of a bacterial vaginosis and imbalance in your, and we want to improve that. And we can with vaginal estrogen, vaginal hormones, you know, using Jova, we can see an improvement in that vaginal pH. So, you know, that's what we want. And that makes a difference. So when you're prescribing hormones, you know, for that, how are you going about now your treatment?
Well, so this is the thing, you know, when we look at what our options are as far as having a healthy vagina and a healthy vulva, our treatment is based on which area are we treating? Because we divide it. And I might say to someone, okay, we're going to use this for your vagina and we're going to use something else for your vulva. And people never think in terms of that. Sometimes, you know, one thing will do it all and sometimes it won't. So when we look at the local vaginal estrogen, so many women look at that and they think, A, it's dangerous, and we can get into that about it. It's not. Using, you know, vaginal estrogen for a year is like taking less than one birth control pill. And it is perfectly safe even for women who have a diagnosis of breast cancer. But the other thing that women think is they think their only option is a cream. And while the creams work and they work very nicely, they can be messy. They can be, you know, not someone's first choice in terms of just what they want to use. And we have so many other options. So as far as vaginal, when I say vaginal, I'm talking again, internal, as far as vaginal options we have, there's a vaginal ring, S-ring. And I go through this every single chapter in my book, Slip Sliding Away, is a different product that goes through. How do you use it? What are the pros? What are the cons? Because when you go for your appointment, you know, Anna, you talked about how you're in and out the door in 20 seconds, which is most of the cases that is. When we do a consultation for this, it takes us almost an hour. So that's actually why I'm writing this series of books, my inside information books, is because each book is like an hour consultation. So everything I'm going to say now real fast, it's all in detail there. But there is a vaginal ring, there's a tablet, there's an insert, there's a cream. All of those things can be used internally. We also know that there's a DHEA, which, I mean, that's your world. You know, DHEA is the precursor for estrogen and testosterone, so that you can actually make your own internal estrogen and testosterone by using it. There's a commercial product called Intrarosa. We also sometimes do it compounded, which will help. On the outside, on the vulva, you know, certainly we can use an estrogen cream. We can use DHEA. We use testosterone. Women forget there are also testosterone receptors that we have to get compounded, but we do that in severe cases because for some women, estrogen alone isn't enough. We have to use estrogen and testosterone together. And then there's the pill, there's the oral pill, Esfina, which is a selective estrogen receptor modulator, which basically just gets those estrogen receptors in the vagina to come alive. And so that's for someone who prefers to put something in their mouth instead of their vagina. And then finally, I have a huge CO2 laser program. I'm a big advocate of the Mona Lisa Touch laser. We have very, very good studies, very good scientific data to show that women who have a CO2 laser treatment do extremely well. And that's because I can treat inside the vagina, I can treat outside, I can treat around the urethra, I can go down to the anus. I really, after I do my vulvar evaluation, I'm able to treat all of those areas using the laser, which increases blood flow, increases collagen, increases fibrin, basically makes the tissue thick and elastic so that when you look microscopically, it looks exactly the same as before someone went through menopause. So we have so much out there. That's the point. There is no way that anyone should be putting up with this and having difficulty, whether it's, you know, painful sex or just discomfort or that urgency, because we have such good solutions.
Oh, we do. And I'm glad you brought up lasers too, because I think there's certainly a place for that. And there's so many out there as well, but they have so much benefit and it's a good complement. We're thinking about facial lasers, thinking about vaginal lasers. I mean, this is an important area to not be afraid. And then again, continuing to exercise the pelvic floor, you know, like don't let those muscles go, just like any other muscles in your body, a part of a normal workout routine that we want to do that. Dr. Stryker, you've given us so much information today and you are just, again, a wealth of information and so candid and open. I know everyone wants you for their gynecologist. And so tell our audience where to get your books, your website, and we'll put all the links in the show notes too.
So my books are all on Amazon. They are part of the Inside Information Series. You can either go to the Inside Information Series page or individually. Right now you can get Slip Sliding Away, Turning Back the Clock on Your Vagina, Hot Flash Hell, A Gynecologist's Guide to Turning Down the Heat. Those are available on Amazon in paperback and digital. I am going to be recording the audio, but I haven't gotten to that yet because I want it to be in my voice. In Chicago, I'm the medical director of the Northwestern Medicine Center for Sexual Medicine and Menopause. And we have an incredible, incredible group of physicians, physical therapists, sex therapists, physician assistants. I mean, it's amazing the women that we have that work in this clinic. And the website for that is sexmedmenopause.nm.org. But the other thing I want to point out is not everybody's in Texas, not everybody's in Chicago. And everything we've talked about here is, unfortunately, these are prescription products. You have to have someone who's going to prescribe them. You have to have someone who's going to do the proper evaluation. And that's the number one question I get is so often when I do an interview, someone will say, so someone should go to their doctor. And I'm like, well, not really. I mean, they can try that, but their doctor may not be able to help them. So if you're not in Texas, if you're not in Chicago, the North American Menopause Society, menopause.org, is a great way to find a menopause expert in your area. There is a find a physician tab. You put in your zip code, names will pop up. I can't vouch for every one of these physicians. I mean, some, quite frankly, are better than others, but it is your best bet at finding someone who knows what we know that we've been talking about if you're not in Texas or Chicago.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I know I always get asked, well, where can we find someone like you, right? And that's it's a challenge, but also asking, advocating, know what options are available to you and being able to, you know, advocate for yourself. I think that's really important.
Yeah, and quite frankly, that's why I wrote my books, because if a woman says, I'm in, you know, rural Iowa and there's not a doctor around for, you know, 100 miles who knows this stuff, but if she reads my book, she can go in there and say, I would like a prescription for a DHEA suppository because I read, and they'll write the prescription, you know? So sometimes, yeah, you do have to know more than your doctor. You do have to advocate for yourself. But I always tell women the number one thing that they need to be healthy and to get the right care is to be motivated. You have to be motivated. You have to say, yes, this is important to me and I'm gonna figure out a way to make it happen.
Never give up. Never give up. I agree. Well, Dr. Stryker, thank you so much for being with us today. I look forward to eventually meeting you in person.
I hope so. Come to Chicago.
I can't wait. I will.
I've got a planet now. In Chicago, I know. That's how we met.
We do. And Bella Gandhi has been on the Girlfriend Doctor show. She's amazing. So,
we've done a couple of things together. So if you go to my YouTube channel, which is Dr. Stryker TV, you can find my interview with Bella. We should get the three of us on together. That would be fun.
That will be fun. I know she'll love it. I'll text her. We'll have to text her both and say, okay, we're doing a threesome. We're going to do this. I would love that. That sounds great. But thank you for all our listeners, and we'll be right back. You guys, this has been such a fun discussion with Dr. Lauren Stryker. So definitely check out her website, check out her books. And, you know, questions probably came to mind during these conversations. And it's there's so much more to talk about here. So I want to hear from you. So go to dranna.com/show. That's where you can enter your question. Just scroll down. There's a place where I say, ask me anything. No such thing as TMI. And I will be sure to read it, review it, and follow up with a show or an Instagram live that just answers your question. So I look forward to hearing from you. I am always here for you and here to help you nourish your body, awaken your mind, your spirit, and your potential fully. And I want you to shine in every way so that you can embrace your life and those you love with passion. So much to do here. And let me tell you, I know sometimes we can't get prescriptions for our products that, you know, that we recommend. And it was important enough for me to create over-the-counter options that can work as good, if not better, or at least almost as good as some of the prescription options that are offered to you. And again, very, very clean, without parabens, without chemicals, without endocrine or hormone disruptors in them. So you guys know me in my Embrace line and in my Shine line, you'll see Jolva, So beauty from the inside out, right? And outside in. So that you want to use daily, clitoris to anus, and use it as a lubricant. Guys can use it too, but definitely something to be part of your regular preventive regimen. And it's so critically important. Pure Balance cream also. Top hormone is progesterone, progesterone and pregnenolone. It's a precursor to our other hormones. You can also use that clitoris to anus. You can use it on the vulva. You want to use it on thin skin in general because it's well absorbed. And I added tripeptide into that. So any areas like face, around your face, mouth, neck, décolletage area, your neckline, that's really beneficial because it helps decrease those age spots that we tend to get because of sun exposure as we age. So that's a great combination to help you. And again, there are hormone receptors all over our body. So this can help in a very natural way. And so a little bit goes a long way. And this is part of that going, you know, start low, go slow regimen. I mean, just start with what you need. And of course, inside out, hormonal health, adrenal health, I've got that covered for you with Mighty Maca Plus as a good daily regimen to add into your routine. I'm drinking it now. I was drinking it during the show while Dr. Stryker was talking. I mean, it's just part of my daily routine and it makes a difference. So I encourage you to try this and then have these conversations with your doctors and feel you are intuitive. Each and every one of you are intuitive. What feels right for you? Do you feel better? Do you feel worse? Where can you maybe switch out some toxins, some hormone disruptors? We give up drinking out of plastic bottles or our hot coffee cups with the plastic lids. We put it in a reusable or one of our girlfriend doctor mugs, right? A stainless steel mug or ceramic mug, something like that. So you're eliminating toxins on a daily basis and keep those detox pathways open with your keto green lifestyle. So all of this to say, look, there are solutions. There are answers. You are not alone in this. Know what's right for you, what works for you. And I'm here to help. I look forward to continuing to bring you experts and more information here on the Girlfriend Doctor Show. And I'll see you next time. Be sure to subscribe and follow and share and leave a review too, but definitely subscribe so you get notified each and every time we go live. I look forward to seeing you next time.